Hello, our dear English listeners. We're finally back with a new episode in English. But as you might have noticed, we have changed our name since the last English episodes. From now on, we are called Brain Pops. To save you all the details we have already discussed in earlier episodes, we just wanted to let you know that the goal behind this podcast stays the same. We will try to get some ideas popping in your brain. And since we don't want to put ourselves too high, we usually invite guests to do so. And those guests can come from all over the world, usually with a background in basketball, but this does not have to be the case. We ask questions from psychology through performance and anything else that comes to mind. We hope to entertain your brain, so with no further ado, I want to let you guys go to the new episode and say, get your popcorn ready and let us entertain your brain. Hello and welcome back to a brand new episode of Brain Pops. My name is Lennart Stechmann and with me, as always, is Dom Theodorou. Hey, Dom.
Hey, Lennart. Good to hear you once again.
Yes, it's always a pleasure and I'm very excited
unpleasant,
today.
It's an unpleasant pleasure, but I think it's okay.
I guess our guest makes up for it. You're shooting sharp again, I hear. Yeah. But I'm very excited for our guest today, since when I started playing basketball, he was basically the local hero in town. And that's where I started watching basketball live, and always a big influence on me back in the day. And I'm very, very excited that he took the time today. Welcome, Jason Boone. Hey, Jason, how are you?
What's going on, fellas? It's good to be here, man. Good to be here. That makes me feel old. That intro made me feel a little old, but it's still good to be here.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but it is what it is. That's how it was back in the day, but very, very good times. I really like to think about those times. I think everybody basically knows your basketball career. Probably had a lot of stations all over Europe. Very successful career. I don't know, like 10, 12 years, I think, maybe even more.
12, yeah.
Maybe you pick us up a little bit, what you're doing right now, or what happened after your career ended, and what kind of fields you got into right now, so everybody is up to date with you.
Yeah, man. So 2019 was my last season. I played my last 2 years in Romania. So I was 1 year in Bucharest and 1 year in Craiova. And so retired officially last summer and spent this last year in L.A. My girlfriend was moving out here, so I hopped on board. I came out here with her and I kind of was like, I'll take a couple months and just figure out life and sit by the beach and let my body heal up and do all those, you know, things that I felt like 12 years of playing professional basketball kind of would allow me to do. And so one of my passions that I really wanted to be better at was taking charge of my mental health. I think that as a man, as a black man, as an athlete, I think you have this pressure, to perform at a high level, to be able to adapt to different situations. And I felt like I was always physically healthy. You know, I took a lot of time to work on my physical health. But my mental health, I felt like, was something that I had to make an effort to prioritize. So I reached out to a friend of mine from college who started a meditation company. And I got a job with them for a couple months as just like a contractor. I was helping with brand awareness. I was running their social media. I was like in charge of their blog. And I was doing a lot of stuff personally in the mental health space to learn about meditation and how that routine was kind of important if you want to be your healthiest version of yourself. And then when that contract ran out, I was kind of back at the drawing board, kind of figuring out like, okay, what do I want to do with my life? And then that's when COVID hit and then everything kind of got put on hold.
Yeah.
And so, so currently we're in LA, living in Santa Monica, but we're going to move next month to Nashville. And I took a job with another friend's company that's moving from New York to Nashville. So in about 4 or 5 weeks from now, I'll be driving back cross country to Tennessee and I'll be starting a job down there. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Oh, that sounds awesome. And you already picked on so many interesting topics where I was like, yeah, stop, let's talk about that. but we got some time today, so we can kind of start easy. But yeah, in the pre-show, I guess we were already a little bit talking about it. Dom, you said that you're also, as a performance coach, really like the idea of players meditating, or you said that you really, it was interesting in that. Dom, have you ever used that, or do players use that you know? Or
I mean, to be honest, this is a topic I always wanted to dive in a little further, and I haven't so far. I haven't really tried it myself, which is actually something I should change, I suppose. That's why I would really like to ask you, Jason, right away. Did you use it after your career, or also during your career? And if you used it during your career, what did it do to you?
So for me, I am looking back now wishing that I would have used it more during my career. Mm-hmm. And I think that the stigma around meditation is that, you know, you're sitting Indian style with incense going, and it's like a very transcendental kind of experience. But in actuality, what I'm learning is that meditation is not like the absence of thought, but it's actually just being able to refocus or focus your thoughts. So when we would do stretching after practice, if you focus just on your breath while you stretch, that's a form of meditation.
It's meditating
if
right there.
You are brushing your teeth and you're focusing on the actual toothbrush, the sensation of the toothbrush on your teeth, that's meditation. You know, if you are about to eat your dinner and you take 5 deep breaths, that's meditation. You know, so I didn't realize the benefits of the meditation as much when I was playing, but that's because I don't think that I prioritized it or decided to learn as much about it. So typically now what I tell people now that I'm done playing basketball is that I think that there's an absence of focus as a professional athlete. I think a lot of guys will prioritize their physical health. They will prioritize recovery. Some people are now prioritizing sleep and, you know, their nutrition. But I think that the mental aspect of it is so daunting, you know, like you have this pressure on you to perform day in and day out, you know, weekly for the fans. And I think that if you don't do exercises to work on your mental ability, it can hinder you in how you perform both physically, emotionally, all that stuff kind of ties in together. And I didn't really realize that till after my career, but I'm thinking that there's a place to help guys that I know who are now coaching kind of instill some of that mental part with players that are younger or are struggling. You know, if you're coming back from injury, if you are in the middle of like a bad streak there, that's when it's the most important. But when you're playing your best, it also can be super important as well.
Yeah, it's so interesting, because especially in basketball, like when your mind is right and you don't feel as much of the pressure, like you can get into this flow, you know, like everybody who played basketball before knows this flow. And like, you always got to ask yourself, how do I get into that? How can I get into this flow? And then, you know, do I get rid of the pressure? And that's something very, very interesting. And yeah, so you said you wish you would prioritize it, would have prioritized it that earlier in your career. Where do you think would have helped you that the most?
Free throws. For me, it would have been free throws. You know, I think that, you know, I was always the kind of guy who I never was okay with just being mediocre. You know, I think I always had something to prove, but the free throws were my Achilles heel my entire career. And I think I didn't realize till later in my career that there's a difference between shooting 20 in a row after practice and not being able to leave the gym till you make 16 out of 20 versus when you get fouled hard in a game and you're tired and you're angry and you have to go to the free throw line and you have to like relax. And I think that as, you know, as a big guy who struggled from the free throw line, it was all mental, because it wasn't like muscle memory. It wasn't anything. It was the fact that when I wasn't focused on that shot and just that shot, if I was thinking about the shot I missed earlier, if I'm thinking about if I miss these two, coach is going to take me out in the last 5 minutes, because and you start thinking about all these other things, that affects your shot so much more than you know, kind of what the coaches traditionally teach you. You know, I had enough arc. My wrist was the right way. Yeah, it's not that, but I think that as I'm learning these mental cues, I'm thinking that, you know, that has to be incorporated in how you teach the game to some people because they respond better, especially like the more intellectual players, the guys who tend to overthink, you know, the ones who are like,
yes, for sure.
If I'm in this right spot, and coach told me to be in this spot, but I'm thinking that if I, you know, if the player, other player would have understood, and these guys who are like these super intellectual deep thinkers, they're the ones that kind of will get themselves in trouble by overthinking and not being able to just remove themselves from that situation and think about it more linearly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's you basically also, I mean, I have the same struggles, to be honest. We talked about it in this podcast before. Dom, my free throw struggles, you mentioned them.
I mean, everybody knows I don't have to comment on the struggles again. So
yeah, but you know, it's just like you described, like you start thinking about the crowd, the coach, the teammate, you don't want to let them down. And then it's so funny. You practice it all over again. You know you can make the shot, but in that moment, something triggers you, like your brain, and then the muscles just
they don't go the way you want them.
Off left,
to.
You don't even know why.
Exactly,
yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, yeah. So, Jason, something that I'm like preparing for this podcast, something that I really, really enjoyed doing this was reading your blogs. It's all something right. you're really into, and I think it was a lot of powerful blogs, actually. Like when you read it, you get in touch with your emotions, and I think that's something very rare, because I think a lot of people are throwing stuff out there today, but there, like, you can really, when you read that, it was very, very interesting to me. And something that, like, a quote that stood out to me was this: I stopped making the mistake of thinking the destination would make me happier than the process. And that I think that kind of also fits, you know, playing the basketball career. And and maybe you can, like, what made you write that? Maybe you can get into a little bit about that blog and how you started writing that. What made you do that? And I think it was very, very interesting.
Yeah, man. So, you know, now that I'm done playing, I have to put myself out there, and I have to understand that, like, I might, whatever I do next, like, I'm going to have to start from the beginning, or at least start from a couple steps behind. You know, I'm not going to walk into something that I'm as comfortable with as I was with basketball. And what I'm learning from people that essentially are good at what they do, that there's commonalities in success in whatever lane you are going to be in. And I think that if everything is goal oriented, like goal based, like, hey, I want to make $1 million. I want to be the CEO. Not, and then you don't work on the structures that get you to that goal, then there's like a big disconnect. And so what I decided to do is, like, okay, if I have these goals that I want to reach, I have to figure out what kind of things do I have to do day in and day out to achieve those kind of goals. And I have to prioritize that as the focus. So if I want to own my own company one day, I have to look at 10 people that own their own company and see what they do. So if they read a book a month, if they, listen to podcasts on finance, if they have meetings with people that, so those are the things, instead of saying, I want to be a CEO, I have to say, I want to be someone that reads a book a month. I want to be someone that listens to pod. And you have to, like, work at these steps first. And so for me, that's been my main focus, because, you know, this next career that I'm jumping into is going to be tech sale based. It's a startup company. So it's like, I'm going to have the CEO right next door. So I'm going to, like, be able to have access to someone that's running their own company. I'm going to be able to learn from them. I have, buddies on the sales team that I know from college who are going to also be working for this company. And I think that, when I look at it in the bigger picture, there are so many different ways to get distracted, but there are also so many things that I can benefit from if I prioritize the structures leading up to the goal. So I can't just be goal based. I have to work on the things that lead up to that goal.
And it's also, what do you do when you reach that goal? Then
at that point,
you're out of gas.
Exactly. So, but if you prioritize the things that lead you to that goal, then that will propel you to whatever the next thing is, you know? Like if, yeah, yeah.
So, and then what also struck me with those blogs was your openness, especially like that one article where you wrote or blog, Every Athlete Dies Twice. And we kind of just touched on it already a little bit. And how does that make you feel, being so open? Like, how was, I mean, I read a lot of comments and they were all basically just positive, but like you throw yourself out there. How is that for you?
I mean, I think that one of the toughest things for people to do nowadays is to just be vulnerable, you know, to put yourself out there. And because I think the way that social media, you know, like you've discussed in the beginning of this podcast, I'm from a different generation than you, you know? So I didn't grow up, you know, I had Facebook in college, but we didn't have Instagram. We didn't have, there wasn't this community of people that feel the need to impart their opinion on every single thing. And I think,
and compare. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that when I've seen the shift in how people act based on the fear of being judged by other people, I just want to go ahead and debunk that. You know, like if you feel the need to comment something negative when I'm putting myself out there, then you're not important to me, you know, unless it's like a constructive criticism. But there are people who you have to listen to, and then there's people that are just noise in the background. And part of meditation is focusing on the stuff that you need to be focusing on and kind of letting some of that other stuff go. So I thought that that would be a pretty good introduction into like putting in the practice of meditation. For me, writing is very cathartic. I feel like I can get relaxed. I can get in that same flow state that you were talking about in basketball when I start writing. And typically I write too much and I have to come back and kind of condense it down. But something along the lines of that article of Every Athlete Dies Twice, that was something that was obviously dear to my heart. I was like struggling with, what is my identity going to be now that I'm done playing basketball? How am I going to, you know, be looked at? Am I just like an old washed up player? Am I always going to refer to myself as a basketball player? Or is there some new challenge that like I can jump into and then put that same kind of work ethic into? And for me, yeah, I felt like that was kind of like the official stamp that I'm done playing basketball. You know, if Olympiacos came calling the next day, I might have reconsidered, but you know, for the most part, I was finished at that point. And yeah, man, it kind of opened myself up to like officially looking for whatever was to come next.
Powerful stuff for sure.
Yeah. Also regarding the one blog post I read from you, just bringing the conversation a little bit to the performance side. You know, my biggest challenge, maybe it's also the biggest challenge for me is always that I want players to understand that if they want to change things in regards to their body, you know, let's say they have permanent knee pain or whatever, that they need to do things over and over and over again to expect a change from their body. Yeah. And then what I've read in one of your blog posts, I'm just going to read it out. You were saying, I'm working to maintain consistency. I'll just keep trying to improve a little bit at a time. It's not a transformation. It's a slow evolution. I'm always in constant progress. Can you just enlarge on that a little bit?
Certainly. So that was the tagline of the company that I worked for, being in constant progress. And I think a lot of the similarities between just like evolution as a person and becoming better at meditation, they all come through consistency. Like we talked about earlier, if your goal is to lose 20 pounds or your goal is to build more muscle, you have to break that down and structure it into a way where that's the result of the things that you are starting to prioritize. So yeah, I mean, for me, I feel like especially in terms of taking it like day by day, breaking it down step by step and doing things consistently. So, I wanted to heal my body after 12 years of a professional basketball career. So what kind of things that I have to do every day? So, I started to learn about intermittent fasting and change the way that my nutrition, I approach my nutrition. You know, it wasn't like, I want to eat healthier. It was like, I want to drink water first thing in the morning. I want to drink tea before I would go to bed. I want to start counting my macros. I want to learn more about micronutrients. And so like I went on this deep path to improve my health, but by taking smaller steps. And it was a consistent day in and day out grind. It wasn't like, you know, I'm going to swap out a beer for a water and now all of a sudden I'm healthy. You know, like there are things that you have to do every day to be healthier. Mm. And then I started to realize that, how I slept was a big part of it. Obviously recovery, like now that I'm doing different things than I did while I was building my body to play a professional basketball season, now I'm building my body to feel good every day, be more mobile, be more flexible, strengthen the little muscles that just like take wear and tear during basketball season. So, I think consistency is always key in those aspects, but it's also like having a plan to identify this is what I need to be consistent with in order to reach those goals. So again, if you keep those goals in mind, it's good, but you have to lay out a plan of things that you're going to consistently do to get to those goals.
Hmm. I mean, your career speaks for that. When you started you started in Regionalliga, low league here in Germany, and just worked your way up through consistency.
That's it. That's it. So, people always say like, you know, you had to get so lucky and blah, blah, blah. But I feel like there always is an aspect of luck, but the harder you work, the luckier you get. And then you have to be ready when that luck comes, when it presents itself, you have to be ready to jump on it. So, to say that there wasn't some kind of luck would be far-fetched. There definitely was an element of I had to catch a couple breaks, but you have to be ready when those breaks come. And I think that comes through the consistent hard work over that stretch of time. So
there was, I was listening to one interview you gave, I think it was a YouTube video, and you have to know when I came to Göttingen, that was like, I think 2011, 2012, when I came to Göttingen, that was the time, or basically I never really met you because when I got there, you were gone. But I have to admit, I always heard people talking in great spirits about you. And in that interview, you mentioned that throughout your basketball career, you were relatively injury free. And whenever we played you, when you were in Ludwigsburg, you know, whenever I get on the court, you know, I always check my surroundings. I always check other players. I always try to find out what they're doing. I always try to find out what other performance coaches are doing because I'm probably addicted to that because I just want to know. And the first time we played against you when you were in Ludwigsburg, I checked what you were doing and I could tell right away that this guy is really into it. You know, from the outside looking at you, it looked that you knew what you were doing, you know? And what I wanted to ask you, throughout your career, what did you learn about how taking care of your body in terms of, is there something that really worked for you? Where in the beginning you were saying that meditation back then wasn't a part of your way of treating your body, but is there something that stood out that was really working for you? Or is it just the whole package of always being consistent in the gym, for example?
So my game was based, I was a very physical player, but I also was athletic, you know? I didn't shoot. I shot maybe 10 shots in my career outside of the painted area, you know, jump shots, turnaround jump shots, half court shots at the end of the buzzer. But for the most part, my game was back to the basket. I'm going to overpower you or I'm going to be quicker than you. So if I matched up against other centers, that were 7 feet tall, and a little bit slow footed, then I had to be the quicker player. If I ran into an undersized center who was my height, I had to be stronger. And that was pretty much my advantage against everybody I played against in my entire career. Like I had one of those strengths that I could lean on, whether it was being faster, playing higher above the rim. Or just being stronger down underneath the basket and just like not letting them get anywhere near the basket. So, with that being the basis of my game, I had to, again, prioritize how fit I was on the court. I had to be able to run for longer times than other guys. And I had to be able to take, I guess, the beating of like, rumbling around in the post with these other players for the majority of the game. So, typically what happens is your body starts to wear down. And I would get home in the summer and I would feel like, you know, I had just taken 20 months, 2 years of just like constant beating, you know, and not to mention like John Patrick's practices were like games, you know? So at the end of the season, you kind of just needed like needed a break. And so what became important to me was how do I prioritize feeling my best day in and day out? And so what I realized was that if I can start to prioritize my mobility, and then like my post practice, like flexibility, like getting my muscles to be more efficient, I guess, instead of like getting bigger and stronger, for me, that made all of the difference. So, you know, I wanted to work on foot speed. I wanted to work on actual like strength. But I had to prioritize it not like linearly, but I had to like think of it as a pyramid. And if I could focus on getting my mobility in check so that my muscles could go through bigger ranges of motion without being hurt. And then stability and flexibility. If I like prioritize those three things as like the basis of my strength pyramid, then I found that like everything else on top of that worked so much better. So, you know, I tore calf muscle. I was out for 6 weeks. I had to recover from a couple of ankle injuries, but nothing, that really like held me back for that long. And I think the process of that is when I would get hurt my ankle or something, the reason that I couldn't explode off of it was when you get hurt, you lose that mobility. You know, it's not that I lost the strength in it right away, but you just lose that mobility. So when I found out that like working that back to full 100% was through mobility and flexibility and stability, then I was like, okay, if I do that when I'm not hurt, that could prevent me from being hurt. And then it was the same thing where, you know, now I don't need to go into the weight room and lift 300 pound deadlifts. I can do single leg stability stuff and I feel as stable and as strong as I have ever felt by like cutting the weight down and doing more stuff to prioritize feeling good and being stable and being mobile and basically remaining injury free for the remainder of my career.
And did you learn that through trial and error, listening to your body, or was there somebody that was like, hey, Boone, what the hell are you doing squatting 300 pounds? like, let me show you.
Well, it came from a combination of both. So I did a lot of the research on my own, spoke with a lot of my strength coaches that I've had. One of the best guys who I worked with was actually in Gottingen, Stefan Adler. And he was the first one he was one of the best to teach me about like functional movement. He was the first one to like do the FMS testing.
I started
to realize, I was like, you know, like I think I'm this big, strong guy who can jump up and dunk and I can run all day and I can bench press 300 pounds. I was like, but I can't like put my arm behind my back and like touch my hands. So like I have this like big, strong chest, but I don't have the mobility in my shoulders to be able to, you know, reach back and block a shot or to keep my hands up on defense without fouling because I like literally can't put my hands above my head. So, when I started to realize that, and that was 2009, 2010, then every coach I had after that, I would approach them with that same mentality. Like, hey, listen, I know that, you know, this workout today is bench press and pull-ups, but I'm going to do some single arm stability stuff on the BOSU ball because I have to work on my stability. And then I would have that conversation with them throughout the course of the season. They would implement a plan for me to do something different. And then I would just learn year after year. Okay. What is his approach? He has a CrossFit background. He's into building strength, but also some of those CrossFit people have the most flexible, mobile joints I've ever seen. I have a coach who in Romania who was a soccer based guy. So he did a lot of like dynamic drills and sprinting and like the most efficient way to run a fast break and to stop and to decelerate and accelerate. And so like you start to just piece together these little tidbits from all these coaches that you've played for and take bits and pieces from each one. And yeah, 12 years later, you have kind of a plan that works for yourself. And it's exciting because I think that even now as I'm done playing basketball, I can get to an even fitter level by prioritizing the things that like make me feel good, but also like aesthetically make me look good. And just like, yeah, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
Going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I get your mentality on that. And I think, yeah, like I said earlier, it just makes sense on looking at your career that you worked, with that type of mentality. But sometimes, you know, maybe a little bit arrogantly, you know, you look at players and you're like, ah, only if you knew, like you have the talent, but how do I tell him, like, figure out, like, get this mentality, you're like, the sky's the limit for you, but the way you do it right now is not sure if the longevity will, yeah. How would you say is that, like, you probably had younger teammates where you were maybe thinking this way. How did you approach them? Did you tell them? Were you like how did you embark on that?
I always tried to lead by example. You know, I had some young guys when I played in Romania who I would see what they would eat at lunch, the kind of snacks they would have on the bus. And I was like the weird old guy who would, you know, dice up raw vegetables and have them in my travel case for the bus. I would make comments about them, you know, snatching three or four desserts after the team meals. I would be doing abs every day before I stretched after practice, and I would grab a couple of them and have them like run through these sets with me. And I think that when they see someone that is not only just like preaching at them like a coach, like, hey, you should do more of this, hey, you should do more of this, it's like I'm still doing this and I'm still playing, it opens up the door for like them to actually be like, well, why do you do this? Or, you know, guys who were playing at my position who were 10 years younger than me that would, you know, get gassed out during practice or bodies would be hurting. I'm like, you know, at 19 you're not allowed to be tired, you know, like, but if you do these kind of things now, then you can play until you're 33, 34, 35 years old.
There was also one interview that I listened to, and I found that really interesting. There you were talking about the three C's. You still remember that one?
Yes, I
do. Could you elaborate on that?
Definitely. So I've actually added consistency as a fourth C. But I always would tell, a lot of younger players that, you know, people always ask you for like these memorable kind of tidbits of like, you know, like, how are you able to play so long, or how, you know, how are you able to stay relatively injury free, or how are you able to do all these things? And I try to, in my writing, I'll come up with all these things that I think of, you know, I'll have a list of 40 things that are important, and then, you know, people are not going to remember that. So I try to make it as memorable as possible. And I was giving some speeches at some basketball camps in the summer, and I, you know, the kids are tired and they're hungry and they're just like, have to listen to this 30-minute lecture of this basketball player who they've never heard of, or so, you know. So I tried to make it as simple as possible to just like keep in the top of people's minds. And I feel like as a professional basketball player, if you can do these three C's, now consistency being the fourth, you can have an edge on your competition. So obviously the first one is being competitive. You have to not only want to be better than your opponent, but like improve on little things that you are doing, competitive with yourself, you know, like set yourself some goals, figure out how to put the systems in place to improve those goals, and then just be competitive with yourself and your teammates, you know, but you have to be coachable while you're competitive, you know, like thinking that you know too much, even if you're competitively trying to, you know, be the smartest player on the court. I'm going to watch the most film. I'm going to learn the plays better than everybody. I'm going to be competitive in that mindset, but don't think that you know it all. So you have to be coachable. And then obviously consistent is that goes with, competitive and coachable. So yes. So I try to prioritize those two first, because I think that those are like the most important ones. And if you are competitive and you are coachable, then I think the consistency kind of falls, in itself. But yeah, so competitive, coachable, consistent, and what's the last one?
competitive. Confidence.
And confident, right. So and confidence comes from doing all of those things over and over again.
Yeah.
So if you lose your confidence, obviously like the mental health part of it is now something that I feel like players are going to need to prioritize more. But that confidence comes from consistently being coachable and competitive. So they all kind of go hand in hand. I feel like, if you lean on one more than the other, I would say be competitive, you know, like listen to your coach for sure. Keep that confidence up, but your confidence is going to kind of come in waves, but you have to be competitive. You know, you have to want to get better day in and day out. And that's not only competing against other players, but competing against yourself.
And something that goes with that is giving and taking criticism, I would say. And we talked to Khalid El Amin about this in the podcast a couple of episodes ago, where he was a very high IQ player. He knew what was going on, and like he could probably criticize you or like tell you what you've been doing wrong all game. And we were like talking to him about, okay, how do you do this, seeing all of it, but then your teammates, like that they're not annoyed by you or think you're arrogant or whatever might come across. And how did you, like you kind of already said it, leading with example, you know, of course goes into that. But how, what do you think makes somebody, makes it easier for somebody to take criticism? Like not that you're attacking the person, that you just have the same goal and like you're trying to help him, but that doesn't always come across when you criticize somebody.
I mean, I think that if it's coming from someone that you trust ahead of time, then it can be viewed as for what it is. But I've also been in situations where guys just don't take criticism well, and the thing that you have to understand when you're giving criticism is that your intention, people might not react based on your intention. People might react based on how they feel. And so you always run the risk of that being the case. And you need to be able to, we say like die on our sword in terms of, I'm going to tell you this because I know that it will benefit you. I don't know how you're going to take it. If you don't take it the way I intend it to and you have an issue with me, what I would always rely on is like, if you really have a problem with me, then we can step outside and we can handle this like men, you know, like if you really have a problem, then let's go outside and talk about it without coach there. And if it comes to like, you want to fight me, then good luck, you know, kind of thing. But I think that if you like, I've been in locker rooms with teammates who got challenged by other teammates. And as long as you understand the intention, I think that it can, you know, however you're feeling in that moment, you can get over it. But some guys, you know, like I had to break up multiple fights between teammates in terms of like emotionally filled practices that, yo, I didn't appreciate the way you did that today. Or, yo, you're slacking, like you have to pick it up kind of thing. And if you get offended by that, then I think it shows more that like your priorities in terms of the goal for the team is not as important as the goal for yourself. So if you feel a certain way about someone criticizing you to make the team better, then that just shows that you're not prioritizing the team as much as you're prioritizing yourself. And I've played with guys who have done that. And you know, like you have agents in these guys' ears, like, yo, you need to score 20 if you want to play at a higher level. And then we'll be, you know, in the locker room, guys will be like, yo, like you're not passing the ball. Like, what, you know, and then if you're getting these mixed conversations from people and you have different goals, then you know that. And then it's, you know, it's on the coach or the captain to address that. But as a center, when I got the ball under the basket, I knew like it was my turn to shoot. I knew that if I caught the ball in a pick and roll and I could score, like I had to score. It's different. Like I feel like that happens a lot with the point guards, you know, like they want to get guys involved. And if someone they feel like is who hasn't basically earned the right to take those shots or is slacking on defense because they're resting on offense and it's affecting the team. And if you get called, you usually get called out, I feel like, by the guards or by the coach. So I've been able to kind of sit back during the majority of my career and not have to have those conversations. But I also feel like when you have to have them, you have to be aware that somebody might take that based on how they're feeling and not what the intent is.
Yeah. And then My question that kind of goes with that, what would be the most successful team you've been on, you would say?
It would be between the 2010 Gattegan team and the 2012 Würzburg team. So, we won the Euro Challenge when I played in Gattegan. But I always look at
that. I obviously know that.
As you remember that, that was like the highlight, definitely the highlight of my career. But I look back at that season, with a little bit of remorse because I felt like we had the team to win the BBL, I think that year, and everything worked out for us in terms of like, in the playoffs, the format of the playoffs, the first seeded team lost to the eighth seeded team. Second seeded team lost to the seventh seeded team. We were in third that year. And then the fifth place team, which was Bamberg, beat the fourth place team. So if we would have beat Bremerhaven in the first round, we would have had home court advantage. We had only lost like three games at home all year. And, Dravo hit a buzzer beater in the fifth game.
I remember that heartbreak.
So that was like, and I always thought that like, if we would have beat Bremerhaven, then we would have beat Frankfurt and then Bamberg in the finals potentially went from a team that was their first European experience to like, that could have been like a game changer in the trajectory of my career. Like now we win the BBL and the Euro title in the same year. And now, you know, Kyle Hines, who I played against that season, who I felt like I was on par with, I watched his career go, you know, that Bamberg team won that title and he got to compete in the EuroLeague. I watched, guys like Brian Dunstan, who I played against in college. And then, you know, he was in Greece when we were in the Euro Challenge. And like, you see the trajectory of some of these guys' careers. And I never want to like look back and be like, oh, that could have been me. But knowing that we were so close to maybe an agent taking a bigger chance or a team taking a chance, you know, kind of thing. And I always felt like I have a tough time calling that my most successful season because I think we left so much on the table. Now 2 years later, when we first got to Würzburg, it was the same kind of thing, you know, like the expectations were a little bit lower. And we knocked Berlin out of the playoffs that year, just by being like a scrappy, hungry kind of group. And I felt like we had a lead against Ulm in all three of the playoff games that we lost, in the second half. And I felt like, again, like as coming in with like lower expectations and being able to supersede them was very successful. And I feel like that was kind of my best personal season. But again, it's like, it's hard to say because I felt like there were so many opportunities that we kind of like left on the table. But all in all, I felt like I had a really good career. I got out, you know, injury free. I feel better than I ever have felt before. But it's always like that, if we would have kind of thing. So, but definitely would be between those two seasons for sure.
Yeah. I was asking this cause I was interested in how you like see success, how you would measure it, you know, and, between, you know, winning titles and then on the other hand, maybe like having your personal best. And then on the other side, having the most fun with it, with the group of guys. And so what made those teams special? Like what made them so good? Like, did you just have the best players, the highest talent, or was it that type of stuff we talked about earlier, having the good relationships, trusting each other, taking criticism? Like, that's what, like, how did you build this basically? I mean, I'm already taking your answer ahead here. Yeah. So that's
you already know where
I like
I'm going
to do this sometimes. Yeah. But like, then my question, how did you get there?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a leading question. We call that, but, it was definitely the fact that the community, within the team was strong. So, a lot of the guys who I played with in years past, the teams that were our best were when that core kind of came back and we could pick and choose the right pieces to fit within that core group. So John Little, Ben Jacobson, Chris Oliver, Dwayne Anderson, the guys who I played with multiple seasons. John Patrick did a really good job of bringing that core back together. And so when we could start off a season and know the guys that we were playing with before, it made such a difference. And I think that our success kind of peaked when the core group was intact. And yeah, I mean, for me, having, you know, I think John Patrick gets a lot of criticism, but he was a great coach because his system was based in the harder you work, the more successful we're going to be. And I want to get guys that are willing to outwork their competition. Doesn't matter where this guy played. I'm going to bring guys in with some chips on their shoulders, some guys that have something to prove, and I'm going to get them all to fight for the same thing. Even if it means fighting against, even if it means fighting against me. Like, he had practices where I could see him go at somebody and like try to break them down mentally, you know, like you know, I read the newspaper today that the fans say that you're soft. I read the other, and he would just be making stuff up. And I'd be like, I watched that same interview. I understand German. They definitely didn't say that, you know, but I could see how, he would test these guys. And I would see like, if they could break through that like initial wall of, okay, my feelings might be hurt or he's calling me out in front of my teammates. And if they could play better because of it, then I knew we had guys that like were ready to win. And, you know, a couple seasons, we had some injuries and some stuff that didn't really work out for us. But for the most part, that tactic in terms of coaching and bringing teams together, with the right guys that want to win, that was the most beneficial thing in my career. You know, having a chance to play with guys who were down for that cause to try to win as many games as possible and never stop fighting.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, Jason, I also have something that I saw by while I was browsing through your Instagram. I think there are a couple pictures. One is you by yourself, and the other one is you with your brother. By the way, big shout out to Malcolm.
Yes.
I was happy enough to play, I think, one season with him in Göttingen.
Nice.
What I wanted to ask. On this picture, let's take the picture with Malcolm. You were wearing a t-shirt which says "Be a good person," and one of my let's say mentors, he also always keeps saying it that you just need to be a nice person first of all. And in the book I was reading, it's called 59 Lessons from Fergus Connolly. The author was also saying the award is reserved for Mr. Nice. So could you just enlarge on that?
Yeah. T-shirt? So I think that, for me, I always had this battle of being too nice of a person on the basketball court. And I had to like go into this like really mean mode on the basketball court. But then I didn't want people to basically not like me off the court. You know, like I think I have the ability to be like a larger than life, like likable kind of personality. You know, I tried to learn German when I played in Germany. I wanted to be able to have conversations with the fans about things other than basketball. And I think that attempting to assimilate into a culture is very important. And I think that because of that, I saw relationships that I've built off the basketball court that I will have for the rest of my life. And I think that anybody that knows me through basketball will say better things about me off the court than they will on the court. You know, like I understand that basketball is a vehicle to be in your best shape, to be competitive, to, you know, to work hard, to instill all these things that like you want to be as a person. But I think when all that stuff goes away, what kind of person are you says the most about how you'll be remembered. And so when I start talking about legacy and like having conversations with people like, oh, I know Jason Boone. He was a really good guy. Not he was this awesome basketball player. Not he was this really funny person. Like he was just a good guy. And I think that if more people remember me for that, then I did my job. I think I play this game for a couple of reasons. Obviously to win, but I play this game to have fun and I play this game to make people happy. And I think that being able to do that for as long as I did made me realize that when you're just a good person on top of everything else, it gets you further in life than anything else. And so I feel like now, obviously, it's a very like testing time, especially here in America, you know, race relations. I feel like there's a lot of like social injustices going on and people are angry. And I always try to, you know, there are people that disagree with me politically. There are people that disagree with me, economically, you know, like where money should go, who should be president, all these, like, but if I can find something that we have in common and we can start there, then I feel like I can have some of these difficult conversations that I need to be having right now. And if I hurt your feelings, you have to know that like it's coming from a place of, I want this world to be a better place. And other than that, there's not too many things that are going to, I think people are going to look back and be like, he was an asshole or he was a bad person. So if I can prioritize just being a good person to start, then I think it opens the door for so many other like honest conversations that need to be had. But, that's like a big part of, okay, what am I doing? Obviously for myself, the people I care about, but what am I doing for like the bigger spectrum? And yeah, I think that's kind of where it all starts.
Yeah. And something that goes into that is just taking other people's perspective, you know, talking about them. Okay. How would I feel if I'm that other, if I'm talking to me right now, yeah, you know, with yeah, what kind of attitude do I talk to them? And I think that's something, talking about the brain, like that's something that's so, like it's so hard for us to do, like to think in other people's perspective. But I think that's something we just need right now, like with all the issues going on that you just, you know, said, especially like it's peaking in America, let's say.
Yep.
I mean, but it's so hard for us. We don't like to do that as, yeah, as humans. Like it's tough for our brain. It takes a lot of energy.
It does, but it's necessary. You know, like I think every fight I get into with my girlfriend, I like always go back to like, all right, what, you know, like I have to put myself in her shoes, because it's like, I don't, you don't think like that. And it's not normal for you to always put yourself in a different perspective. But I think, yeah, you gain clarity when you're able to do that time and time again. And then it just allows you to just be a more open-minded person, and you're more receptive to the stuff that people go through. And so that's like been a big part of what I know I need to improve on, but what I also like really want to get better at.
Yeah. Yeah. And then at the same time, taking other perspectives, but then at the same time, also having this, you know, then we're back to meditation, knowing what's going on inside you. And, I mean, that's basically something, maybe going back a little bit to meditation again, like when you, like you said it earlier, what all is meditation? And it's basically, okay, where are my thoughts going when I don't have something, when I don't look at my phone all day or something, and to find that out and then like add that to the perspective of others. And then, but it's hard.
It's hard. Like, it's hard. And you
it's
get
easy
locked
to
down.
Say this on a podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you get, and the thing, I mean, that's been the best thing about meditation is the company I was working for, they actually sold a handheld device. So it would sync up with your breath, and then you would hold it in your hand and you could feel the vibrations in your hand. So if you started to wander off, and you know, that's going to happen in meditation. Like you're not going to clear your mind of everything, but if you can always bring it back to the vibrations in your hand and just focus on the vibrations and try to sync your breath with the vibrations, then it's like practice, you know, it's like, it's, you can find yourself getting, they don't say better, but if you get more consistent with the practice of, okay, my thoughts are now wandering, I'm identifying that my thoughts are now not on the vibration, and I'm bringing my thoughts back to the vibration. That is like how you improve on it. And it comes like everything else. Like you have to get stronger. You have to work on it. And that's why they said like that you're always in that constant progress, because I could have a bad day where I'm, you know, I lost my job, my parents are sick, my, you know, brother broke up with his girl, you know, like all, you can find all these things to think about that were going to pull your attention away. But being able to take 5 minutes and just keep your attention on one thing, and then when you lose that attention, bring it back to that one thing, that's where it's really powerful. And that's what I've seen. Like people will start meditating and be like, I can't do it because my mind goes somewhere else. But the actual, like the point of meditation is when your mind does go somewhere else, identifying that and then bringing it back to whatever it is you're focusing on. And the more you can do that, the more you can, okay, I feel like nervous at this free throw line, but I'm bringing my attention back to just shooting this shot. I'm not listening to the crowd. I'm not listening to the coach. I'm not thinking. I'm just, for the next 10 seconds, I'm going to focus on two dribbles, shooting it at the back of the rim. Like, that's all you have to focus on in that moment. And it's just such a different way of approaching it that I feel like a lot of trainers and coaches are kind of getting into now. But I think it could be so helpful in this next generation. And there are these guys who obviously want to have these competitive advantages in terms of basketball. And I think they're going to have to latch on to, you know, it's not going to be about getting 1,000 more jump shots up. It's going to be about, what am I eating? How am I sleeping? How am I recovering? And what is like my mental state going into every practice? And I think the guys that prioritize that, along with the work ethic that it takes to just be a good athlete, that's where you're going to see these guys start going in the future. So yeah, I'm working on some things behind the scenes that, I can't really say right now, but I think that there's a lane for a different way of approaching training as an athlete, like a high level athlete, not your 16-year-old high school kid in America who just wants to play on the varsity team, but like high level athletes that are looking for a competitive advantage. There's a lot of stuff in regards to sleep and recovery and nutrition that like needs to be taught that can separate them without having to spend hours and 10 more hours a day in the gym. Like you can get better at, I feel like, the base level of whatever sport you're playing if you start prioritizing some other things along with your particular sport that you're training for. So yeah, we're working on some stuff to bring that to light. So
yeah, Dom, like you always said back in the day, Dom, to get the biggest bang for your buck, you know, like it's not about putting in 10, 12, whatever hours. If you can put in 2-3 really good ones and do that consistently, it's going to bring you a lot further than messing around in the gym or something.
Definitely.
Yeah, Jason, we're almost at an hour. Is there something else you wanted to talk about? I mean, something that comes to my mind is like you talking about practicing differently and then having this business side of, let's not only professional basketball, but I think sometimes tough to integrate that into that business and then not getting, yeah, let's say, eaten alive or, you know, not making the money you could as an athlete. And is that something you struggled with sometimes through your career, like that you were too nice and people took advantage of you and you regret that sometimes? Or
no, I think that's hard to say, because
not regret was probably the
I think regret is
tough of a word,
the key word that I can't agree with that on. But I think for me, being able to have conversations with the like, when I realized that, okay, the year I made the most money playing basketball, there was still somebody who was paying all of our contracts, you know, like there are people that when you start thinking like, okay, I've reached a level of success, you need to always challenge yourself. Like, I never want to be the smartest person in the room. I never want to be the richest person in the room. I always want to learn from people that, are at a level where I want to get to. And I think that, you know, after these, BBL games where I would be in the VIP rooms, and having a chance to speak with some of these sponsors about, you know, stuff that they do. And again, just being a personable person, having some of those conversations opened my eyes to, okay, there's a long life after basketball. And if you want to live in a way where you can now start to build generational wealth for your family and people that you care about, then it's going to start by having some of these conversations with these people that have essentially done that. And so I always tried to make it a point to, you know, whatever sponsor we were wearing on the front of our jersey, the back of our jersey, or our shorts, I wanted to have some kind of relationship with them and talk to them and learn from some of the stuff that they did to get them to a level of what I deemed success in the beginning. And then couple that with, okay, how much am I willing to work, but also like balance that happiness? And I think for me, success comes from being able to balance freedoms. So like, whether it's physical freedom, so like I don't have to worry about, you know, going to rehab because my body's healthy. That allows me a certain kind of freedom. Financially, I've put things in place to where I don't have to struggle and stress out over every dime spent because I have some sort of freedom financially. But then like yep. also if I knew if I worked 80 hours a week to make more money, but I was less happy, you have to like find that balance somewhere. So for me, that's how I gauge success. People that are happy, that are able to help other people, but also are happy within themselves, that if I can like get to that point to where I'm like comfortable and I can, you know, take some trips and do some stuff for people that I care about, but also like not work myself to the bone where I'm always stressed out, find that balance. And that's where I want to be. So I like try to see people who I feel like are at that level and just learn as much as I can from them. Because I think it's in the doing. And so you have to see people that have done it and then take what you can from them.
Awesome. Awesome.
Nice words.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a little bit out of questions. Any stuff you guys wanted to talk about? Something that popped up through the episode? Dom, you got any more questions?
I'm good here.
All right, I want to applaud you guys, man. I had a teammate in Ludwigsburg, Kelvin Martin, who him and I tried to do a podcast for like 3 or 4 episodes, and it was tough to stay consistent. And I think I like love what you guys are doing. I went back and listened to a couple episodes. And I'm excited to, you know, get this one out and share with all my people. But I love the ability to have these conversations. And I think, I think what you're doing here is special. And I think that you guys need to be applauded. I want to extend some gratitude and just let you guys know that I appreciate having a chance to be on the show, learn from you guys, but also like, I just appreciate what it is that you're doing with this space and getting this kind of like quality information out to people. So salute you guys.
Well, appreciate
Thank you so much,
Jason. Yeah, Leonard, but there's one last question. You tend to forget this question, I know. But I do. For a change, would you like to ask the question, Leonard?
Well, Jason, I think I forgot to tell you. So now you got to be spontaneous.
All right.
but maybe I don't know if we did it with Mike. But at the end of the episode, we always ask our guests if they know somebody that they want to hear on this show and give the space to spread some of their views. Maybe you got somebody in mind that might have some interesting perspectives for us.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the first person that comes to mind is my little brother. I feel like you guys both know him. But yes. his path right now is very different. He's teaching third grade and he just moved to Georgia, took a really good job at a nice school down there. It looks like a college campus. He's teaching down there. I know that he would love to do it.
Awesome.
But
I think he's logged in for sure.
I think Ben Jacobson is the guy who, has seen his ups and downs after his career, but had such a promising career to begin with and then dealt with injuries. And I felt like rebounded better than anybody I've ever seen. You know, like he had a back injury that kept him, I think, from making the NBA. He had another back injury when he was in Gottigan. And then he was just kind of riddled with injuries his whole career. But his story through basketball, the stuff that he's learned in his life, I feel like is something that needs to be shared to as many people as possible. And then I'd be interested to hear you guys have a conversation with JP. If you get that one going, I would definitely tune in.
Oh, yeah. So, great nominees.
Yeah. So
putting a lot of pressure on us now. Three nominees.
That's it. I'll be looking. I'm subscribed. So I'll see in the feed when the next one pops up, kind of who's on the docket. But, yeah, man, this is great. So again, I just want to applaud
awesome.
You guys.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you a lot for sharing your knowledge, your wisdom and your perspectives. I think a lot of brain pops going on here during this episode.
Yeah.
Maybe we hear from you soon with your coaching your project that you were teasing. And I'm really hoping that all our listeners enjoyed this episode also. And we're very happy to be back on the road and we'll be producing more content and more brain pops in the next upcoming weeks.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Dom. See you guys soon. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.